crazy news to report, guys. Obama's got a coke problem. No, I haven't been reading the National Enquirer. I'm talking about his unwillingness to make a final decision on Keystone XL, the pipeline that could rake in $100 billion for vulture capitalist brothers Charles and David Koch. Now, it's understandable why Obama hasn't officially signed off on the pipeline yet, considering how much he's already pissed off his Democratic base. But given his close ties to oil and gas executives, many environmentalists aren't holding their breath. So with the Democratic Party continually selling out to big oil, what options does the modern environmental movement have? Earlier, I spoke to environmentalist and author Derek Jensen. I first asked him how the current industrial system plays into the environmental destruction of the planet.
When I give talks around the country, I ask people, so do you think that the government takes better care of individual human beings or human communities, or do you think it takes better care of corporations? And nobody ever says that it takes better care of individual human beings. Do we want to talk about the BP oil spill? Do we want to talk about right now how Chevron is suing people in the Amazon whose lives and homes they've destroyed through oil extraction? I mean, we have just a bazillion examples of how the system is really set up to protect those in power. And system is set up to facilitate commerce, and that's at the expense of living beings, human and otherwise, and living communities.
Can technology be harnessed for good and be used in a way that's compatible with nature?
Well, I think we have to ask more than just, I think we have to ask what we mean by technology, because I love what Lewis Mumford wrote about how there are authoritarian and democratic technics, T-E-C-H-N-I-C-S. And what he meant by technic is that a technology does not rise out of or lead to a social vacuum. And it takes, you know, that I'm living on Talawa land here, Talawa Indian land, and the Talawa lived here for at least 12,500 years. And they didn't invent backhoes. And it's not because they were too stupid to invent backhoes. It's because they had a mindset that made it so their technologies they invented weren't the sorts of technologies that are invented by the dominant culture. Instead, they would have salmon welcoming songs, for example. That would be a form of their technology, would be a song to welcome the salmon home. And so, back to Lewis Mumford, it takes a certain mindset to create a chainsaw. And once you have a chainsaw, a better example is an automobile. It takes a certain mindset to create an automobile. And once you have an automobile, that will lead to certain changes in society so that you will view distance differently. You know, later on today, I have to go into town, which is a few miles, and that would be an entirely different experience if I were walking than if I'm driving. If I'm driving, I can drive into town. I'm like, oh, I forgot to bring, you know, one thing that weighs 3 ounces. I can drive 2,000 pounds back a couple miles just to pick up this one thing, as opposed to if I'm walking, I'm going to make sure that I have everything before I go. It's just the smallest example. We design our societies around the technologies. And Mumford's point was that some technologies will lead to what he called democratic technics, and some technologies will be more authoritarian. And much of that has to do with whether the technology can be locally controlled or whether it makes you dependent upon outside sources. And one really quick example, and I'll drop this, is the difference between, say, solar photovoltaics and passive solar. Anybody can arrange their home or can arrange how they are to the sun. That's passive solar. That's a democratic technique. Anybody can do it. On the other hand, solar photovoltaics require rare earth. They require mining. They require the entire infrastructure that goes around with it. So once you head into an authoritarian technique, you are forcing yourself into some sort of authoritarian governmental system. And so the question about can technologies be compatible with the Earth, I think it depends on the technologies. I think democratic technologies certainly can be compatible with life on the planet. And I think authoritarian techniques are compatible neither with human democratic decision-making processes nor with life on the Earth.
And I wanted to move on to one of your articles where you write, every morning when I awake, I ask myself whether I should write or blow up a dam. I keep telling myself to write, although I'm not sure that that's right. Are you suggesting that eco-terrorism is at all effective in terms of fighting back against the establishment?
What I'm really trying to get at with that is that we can have, there's a line by Carl Jung where he says, philosophy butters no parsnips. And I've always kind of liked that line because we can philosophize all we want, but what's really important is what happens in the real world. And if our philosophy helps to bring about certain changes in the real world, that can be good or bad depending on what those changes are. And the truth is that salmon don't need for us to write books about them. What salmon need is for dams to be removed, and they need for industrial logging to be stopped and industrial fishing to be stopped, and they need the oceans not to be murdered. And that's so what I'm really trying to get out with that line is that what happens in the real world is what is primary, and that's what's most important. And we can, you know, you and I can have this conversation, and that's great, and people can listen to this conversation. And if it doesn't actually make a change in the real world, then so far as I'm concerned, it's not really important. But what's really important is how things get changed in the real world.
Well, let's talk about the real world. People are fighting back in places such as Russia, Canada, but are facing extreme penalties for doing so. Decades-long prison sentences for piracy in Russia. Snipers unleashed on indigenous activists in Canada for their stance on fracking. I mean, is this the only way to fight now is to become a martyr?
I don't think that the only way to fight is to become a martyr. I think that there are casualties in any war. And right now, the primary casualties, of course, are, non-humans. And also, the primary casualties among humans are members of various oppressed classes. And so, there's a sense in which, I mean, this is, in many ways, this is simply the old line about those who make nonviolent revolution impossible make violent revolution inevitable. And we need to speak out and we need to change things. And, you know, every cell in my body wants for us to have a voluntary transformation. You know, very nice. We want to all hold hands and, you know, sort of move into the future. And I think that we need to, try everything we can, but if something doesn't work, then we need to figure out something else that may work. And so I don't think that we need to be martyrs. I think that we need to start thinking of ourselves as a serious resistance movement, and we need to start thinking of ourselves as a serious revolutionary movement. I think we need to start thinking very seriously. I mean, here's one of the ways I put this, and I've put this forever, is that if space aliens came down from outer space and they were vacuuming the oceans and they were changing the climate, they were causing the greatest mass extinction in the history of the planet, and they were putting dioxins in every mother's breast milk, and they were causing people to die of cancer, and they were polluting the world so that everybody is inhaling secondhand smoke, you know, we would know what to do. We would know how to, we would know that we need to break our identity with them, and we need to bring down their entire system. And yet when it's capitalism, when it is the governments to which we pledged allegiance since we were children, then suddenly we get really, really not very smart about it. So what we need to do is we need to break our identity with the system, and we need to move our loyalty to our communities and to the natural world. And then we need to start thinking like a really serious resistance movement, and we need to start thinking very, very seriously about what we're going to do.
Derek, I couldn't agree more, and I wanted to sum this up because you're talking about breaking out of this establishment mindset, and I think that the really big problem is this environmental, across the environmental movement, they're catering to the Democratic Party, and you've talked often about the lesser of two evils when it comes to the two-party system. Why are so many environmental organizations caving to the Democratic Party instead of throwing their full weight behind other parties that could actually do something in terms of policy changing? We have about 2 minutes left.
Well, I think part of it has to do with the question of what their loyalty is to, or to what or to whom is their loyalty. And a great example of this is, what do all the so-called solutions to global warming have in common that are presented by the mainstream environmentalists? And what they all have in common is they take industrial capitalism as a given and the natural world as something which must conform to industrial capitalism. And that's nuts in terms of being out of touch with physical reality. And my point here is that, once again, once you switch your loyalty, then you can make conscious decisions as to whether you want to, in this case, you know, sacrifice some ideals to, or sacrifice some loyalty for a practical purpose, make a temporary alliance. But if your primary loyalty is to maintain the system, all you're going to be is a loyal opposition, which is the best we can hope for from the Democrats. You know, the Democrats, so far as I'm concerned, the Democrats and Republicans are just good cop, bad cop. You know, the bad cop comes in and beats you up, and then the good cop comes in and feels your pain while they do the same thing.
Thank you so much for your insight. Derek Jensen, author, environmentalist, appreciate your time.
Oh, thank you so much. Have a great day.